What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either. Really. Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here.
Hi, friend.
Happy Monday. Here we are in the sweltering heat of the Midwest.
Today, we are talking about the scariest part of making a human for me, which is postpartum depression. And then I'm going to talk about what I'm trying to do different this time. This was my fear of postpartum depression was maybe the number two reason that we were not going to have a second child. Only paralleled with finances. And just wondering if it was if it was financially available to us, were the two number one things that we were considering and our main reasons why for a little bit we decided we were not having a second. So it feels really present. And I feel good. I feel really good about the things. I'm excited to talk about things that I want to do differently this time and how I think that my experience will be different. But first, let's talk about what our experiences were with this and what made it so tricky and confusing.
Can I ask, you said that postpartum depression was very much on your radar for the second baby. Was it on your radar at all for your first pregnancy?
Yeah, I mean, it runs in my family. I already struggle with anxiety and depression. It was something that I thought about and I thought I was prepared for. I don't know that there's a way to prepare for it, which is silly because here I am saying that we are so prepared.
Or to know what it feels like until you know what it feels like. I mean, I wonder if you do know a little bit more how to prepare for it since you've actually been through it and experienced it. That does feel different than just having it on your radar, you know it's a thing.
Yeah. It was definitely something I thought about, considered, talked to my therapist about. Yeah, in a different way than I think I am this time. I think it was in the back of my head where I was this is a thing. It could happen. I'm genetically predisposed to it. And also, it'll be fine, which in a way, ultimately it was, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Another question I have for you about this. So you already had it on your radar and then you have Charlie. How quickly did you realize that you were experiencing it? You were oh, this is happening now.
It was really tricky because I had him and I had
Just to pause, I think it is worth noting, not that we're fooling anyone, but we are not medical professionals. And so anything we say about postpartum depression today is not to be taken as medical advice. I think that as we were preparing, I was literally thinking I don't know exactly how to define what postpartum depression is, in part because it seems tangled up in, influenced by so many different things.
And there's so little, still feels like there's so little resource or understanding. And I think everything gets housed under this phrase of postpartum depression, but there's actually postpartum OCD, there's postpartum anxiety.
Just it's not even all postpartum. There's a lot of stuff that can happen for people during pregnancy also. Yeah. So it's a really it kind of billows out in a lot of directions.
And because it's happening in someone who is assigned female, I made big quotes there and made a squishy face. And because it has to do with hormones, other big quotations, it's like discounted as it's like not real or it's not that big of a deal. And like no one gives a fuck about it.
Like menopause.
Yes. Oh, my God. We need to do an episode all about my deep curiosity and like research and interest in perimenopause and menopause.
Yes. Yes. And it feels like just now, people are actually looking at it as a real thing and not just like, oh, hot flashes. You know, like this is a huge life experience that is worth our attention and study.
And it can like last for like 10 years of your life. It's like a decade where you're coming like into it and through it. And then like, then you're like post-menopausal. I can't even. I experienced right after having Charlie what I would categorize as like baby blues, which felt very like very much this like rushes of hormones of like deep big emotions are like shifting a lot, like often crying, feeling overwhelmed, like sleep deprivation, all of that stuff, which felt like intense and at times horrible, but like manageable and not like this all-consuming darkness or dread. I did have from the beginning, I think what should have maybe been a flag for me is I experienced what I referred to as sundowning, where at, like around 3 or 4 o'clock, I would just start to get this overwhelming sense of terror.
What did that overwhelming sense of terror, what did that look like?
It felt like seasonal depression turned up to like 100.
Mm.
Like my stomach would feel sick and queasy. I would feel this like looming despair, like bad things are about to happen. And it correlated with like the sun starting to go down because this is September, October, November. So, that was horrible. And that was pretty much immediate and continued, I would say, like throughout Charlie's first year of life.
Every night, like daily.
Yes, daily. And I would start having like rituals around it, like lighting tons of candles or like making sure lights were on and like asking Andrew. I was like, I need music. I need energy. Like something has to happen at this time of day. So tried a lot of things to combat it, but that was pretty immediate. But it wasn't until Charlie was 6 months old where I experienced what I like refer to as like capital postpartum depression. And there was like this distinct moment I remember where I like could not feel my face. I was just utterly in despair. I was like babysitting a friend's kid, and I texted her and I was like, kids are safe. I don't know where I am. Like, what is happening? I need you to come back. And that marked a distinct moment. I like had taken on new jobs and client work, and I like paid back advances, and I just like quit everything. I like super did not want to be alive. I would like drive around in circles and like drive myself to the hospital and then just sit in the parking lot. It was a horrible time.
How long did that stretch of it last?
So hard for me to, it's like such a blur. I feel like I was like starting to really feel like myself again by Charlie's first birthday. And it wasn't that intense for 6 months. Cutting down every obligation that was, I could not handle any amount of pressure or sense of obligation. And I just felt like I was letting everyone down, that I shouldn't exist. So that was really helpful, was cutting all that stuff out. But what made it so difficult was, so I had that moment, I couldn't feel my face, and I started reaching out and trying to like get some medicine, get some help. And I had this like horrible psychiatrist, and it's COVID, so everything is remote. So I had this like remote call with them, and they laughed at me when I told them, I was like, I think I'm experiencing postpartum depression. Like, I'm not okay. And they asked how far I was postpartum. And I said 6 months, and they laughed and said that that wasn't a thing.
What?
I knew that that was inaccurate. But it was so infuriating because I was like, I am not okay. I need help. And then I finally got someone to like prescribe me. I don't even remember what the medicine was. But they were like, you can't have this while breastfeeding. And so I had that call while I was out like working that day and Charlie was at home. And so I just texted Andrew and I was like, I'm not coming home. Like, you just have to like just feed the baby. And we went cold turkey on weaning when Charlie was 6 months, which physically painful, emotionally mm-hmm. painful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we'd do that a million different ways over. But it turned out that the medicine that they gave me, it was totally fine to breastfeed on. It's just that no one wants to have any liability, or if you say you're breastfeeding, no one wants to care for you. And also within a week, the medicine like made my symptoms so much worse that I had to stop taking it. It was actually like completely wrong. And then like I did find the medicine that was supportive to me. So that was just like those things. I feel like are not going to happen this time. I know how better to advocate for myself. I feel a lot sturdier in telling doctors to like fuck right off. But
the laughter in particular.
The laughter was so horrible. It's just still burned in my mind. And even though in the moment I like knew, I didn't take it on as though like I was just like, wow, you are so dumb. But it was, that was so incredibly painful.
Mm-hmm.
And in a like feeling helpless kind of way, it's like, I know that this is real and I need support. And the person that I've come to for help, who is supposed to be a professional, is like literally laughing into the phone at me. There's so many contextual things also going on around that time. And it's like, was this burnout? Was it like this, heightened, overwhelming, like gender and identity dysphoria, because it was like I was also about to come out as non-binary. There was a huge shift in the trajectory of my work. Like, I went through a really horrible friend, colleague breakup. We were still in and out of lockdown. You know, there were so many other pieces to it as well. Yeah. And I think you've talked about like what was this? I didn't even know it was happening. So what was your experience like?
So we had, Otto was born in the spring of 2020. So it was like, we were like completely cut off from, we didn't see anyone ever. Like, we were living in our little tiny house. I mean, I've talked about this a little bit, but I think I almost as soon as Otto was born, I mean, like by the second night that he was here, I was spiraling really hard about feeling inadequate in my role as a mom. And it was like, and I've also talked before about like Otto really, really was only soothed by the sensation of like being bounced around the house, and I couldn't do that. And like handing him over to Micah to do that felt like my insides were imploding. I mean, it was like a physical pain that I felt. And that dynamic of feeling like an inadequate mother was pretty defining part of my experience of being a parent for like the first year and a half or so. And there was no like clear end to that. It was just like this very gradual fade of a shift in me. So the way I was experiencing the first year or so of Otto's life was that I identified something, and my brain identified that thing as true, which is like, you are an inadequate mother. And it wasn't like, oh, this is coming from another source. It was like, this is a thing that you know is true, and it makes sense that you would be devastated about this. And by the way, you can't tell anyone. You cannot tell anyone that this is what you're feeling, because if you are an inadequate mother, the last thing you can do is tell anyone that you're an inadequate mother. So, because then they won't trust you and they shouldn't trust you. I mean, it was just like this whole tangled mess. I barely talked about this with Micah, let alone anyone else. And what, so it kind of continued to billow until, for me, there was more like suicidal ideation attached to it. And it was, and I think I've also talked about this on the podcast before. And if anyone wants to skip ahead a couple minutes while I talk about it, that's good. But just like feeling very strongly that not only was I an inadequate mom, but like Micah and Otto would be a lot better off if I was not here. And again, I didn't identify that as anything other than like, no, this is the fact. This is real. This is how you should feel. You know what I mean?
Oh, Rebecca.
And I think it was probably the worst for me when Otto was around 9 months old. Which I was trying to do the math of like when Charlie was 6 months old and Otto was 9 months old. Were we experiencing this around like similar times? I don't know. But I didn't tell any like professional person about any single part of this until Otto was about a year and a half old. I started going back to therapy and I told my therapist, and my therapist was the one who was like, that sounds like postpartum depression. And I said, but he was 9 months old. How is that? Like, that doesn't make sense. And she was like, no, you can, postpartum depression can happen much later than that, like stereotypical, you know, first few weeks. So I still don't know exactly what happened or, you know, like how to identify, like what label to put on what that was. I see it really differently in hindsight than I did when I was experiencing it. And it does make me wonder for other people, in that boat, how much the difficulty of it is your perception being so skewed and how that skewed perception can make you really hesitant to tell anyone about it. Like the guilt that you maybe feel or the shame that you feel, for lots of different reasons. Like there's all the, like what I'm supposed to be feeling about motherhood and what I'm supposed to be feeling about my new baby. And so I think, I don't know, it was kind of complicated experience for me. And I think in hindsight, I think what would really help me is, or what would have helped me is the people around me being more informed about postpartum depression, like people that I trust to be able to see what's happening and be a voice outside of my brain. Because my brain was actually not a trustworthy source. But like, I didn't know that. it felt like it was. So
interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon. We love seeing your comments come through. We love getting to know each of you better. Like, you being there really means the world to us.
If you want to support the project financially, you can become a paying patron for as low as $5 a month. That's less than a latte.
But there's lots of free ways to support the podcast too. Sharing episodes, giving us one of those very pretty 5-star reviews, all of that makes a huge difference too.
And you can also join Patreon without paying. So the show notes will always be there for you. Okay, back to the show.
So what are the things that you are doing? Because you know you're like moving back into this experience with your body and mind again. What are the things with the information that you have now that you are setting into place that feel like we're going to do this a little bit differently this time?
Yeah. The first thing is that I found a therapist who specializes in postpartum. And she actually has, we're starting it tomorrow.
first meeting?
No, I met with her a couple weeks ago and she has this like program system, I don't know what, where you like literally build a postpartum plan together. That includes like your support team. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but we're going to spend, I'm going to go weekly and we are going to build this thing together. And then you know, I'll keep working with her as time goes on and throughout postpartum. So that feels different. I had a therapist when I had Charlie, but who was wonderful, but she didn't specialize in this. And I also think that like I was pretty sporadic in going because of COVID and then like finances. But I am, this is like top financial priority. And so that feels really different. The other thing that I'm doing that is incredibly different is that I am building in a maternity-ish leave. There'll be some work that I will have to continue doing, but I am like at the probably three times this week I have turned down things or said no, that timeline doesn't work for me. Like I am not taking work on between from like October 15th until like mid-January. I am not taking anything new on. I will be doing the barest of minimums, and then I am really going to hold myself to slowly reintegrating. Because one thing that I did with Charlie, well, I was teaching online, but I had like multiple classes that I was teaching, and I was like grading work in the NICU,
dude.
And yeah, that was not great for me. So fiercely protecting my time leading up to the birth and then the months after, and then really, really slowly working my way back to, I don't know, whatever my new baseline is for taking on work. So that feels important and really hard. And then the thing that I was thinking of this while you were talking is I'm writing and making art about the shame that comes over me when I'm not okay, and trying to release, like figuring out ways to release that like layered, that added layer of help of like hating myself on top of like things being hard. That feels like the trickiest piece. This is going to be like work with therapist and that fear. Oh my God, I was so scared to tell anyone how deeply I didn't want to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like, they'll take Charlie from me. They'll like lock me up. Like it felt so, so scary to name that out loud. And I just felt so much shame for not being okay. Cause I was like, I have a healthy baby and I'm safe and I have this house and I have food. And so trying to let go of that, which is like lifelong work for me in every area. And then paying close attention. This is something that I've been working on over maybe like the last, definitely 6 months, but like building up to it over the last year, is paying really close attention to hints of burnout. Because I am excellent at going so hard until I crash and burn. And it's so hard for me to be like, to pause or take a break before I'm so desperate for one that there's no way to avoid it.
What are the flags that you notice in yourself?
Avoidance, when I like I'm not able to respond to texts or emails, when I'm letting stuff pile up, when I like this overwhelming sense of FOMO, like I can't go do everything. The threshold for me, like being able to like do everything and hold all the juggle all the things that I'm holding at once, and from me like completely being like curled up on the ground in the fetal position, the space between that is so fucking small. And I'm trying to like stretch that space out. And the only way I know how to do that is to stop way, 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 way before I reach the end of my capacity, which is not how I was raised. And I don't think you've talked about this so much, but it is hard and it is painful. And I feel selfish and I feel foolish and I feel weak. And I am trying to reframe this as separate from my worth. And it is this morally neutral fact that my capacity is going to ebb and flow through seasons of my life. And I cannot light myself on fire.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's like some of these larger patterns, but they almost are like exacerbated or exaggerated in this window of time, and being really fiercely protective of boundaries. And
it's just so incredibly hard. So hard for me to do, especially as I look out in the world and see all the ways and the struggles and things people do. And I'm like, yes, I could. There's a lot of things that I could do in ways that I could push myself. And then I am unwell. I'm like super unwell. And so just trying to stay well, which means not going out and doing all the things that I want to do, which makes me feel ineffectual and not cool and uninteresting and boring.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, it is wild to me that we don't have like paid maternity leave as a given in our country. And the idea of people being forced to rush back to work when they're like, their bodies are still bleeding and their babies are still so tiny is crushing to me. It's infuriating and it's devastating. And then also it's interesting to think like how we could look at that and be like, what am I doing? Like, what kind of luxury life do I want to make for myself? But it's not that. It's like, everyone should be able to have the option to be like, that's good for you and your baby to be able to have the space to actually honor what has just happened to both of you. And have the support that you actually need. That's what it should be for everyone. And if you have the option to do that, like, gulp it up.
Yeah. And if they're like freelancers, are like, I am having to construct this carefully.
Yeah, it's not the same as like you are in a job that's like, we're going to pay you to take 6 months. It's like you're having to make sacrifices in order to be able to create this and forge this for yourself.
Mm-hmm. And still, I feel guilt. You know, you can feel guilty about it. The last thing I'm doing differently this time around that feels so luxurious and important and powerful is that I have weekly support from a queer trans sitter. So Charlie currently has like a part-time sitter nanny over the summer, and they are just so wonderful and affirming. And to have a caregiver in my home who represents a similar gender identity as me, but having this human in my home helping care for Charlie and me has been so good. And Charlie's going back to school and I don't super need them. It's definitely not a huge need in terms of childcare, but I am holding on to them one day a week to support with Charlie, to support with me, to support in our household. And that feels like one of the biggest differences this time from last time.
Yeah, you have very clear, tangible, consistent supports set in. That seems smart. And you are moving through it open-eyed, and here we go.
And I'm sure new horrors await.
Oh, yeah. And also, wow. Who is this person going to be?
God, I have no idea. I can't come up with a name. I don't know. It feels really different this time around. Just feels like so, I can't even fathom. I can't even fathom what another person will be like.
I know. A whole human, just like already so full of whoever they are. Like, you're going to get to meet them and kiss their cheeks and hear their voice.
Which is equal parts delightful and terrifying.
Yeah. While we're here and we're talking about this, what do you feel like from me? What would be most helpful that I could offer you during that stretch?
Oh, that's so sweet. God. This part feels hard because it's like people will be like, what can I do? And I'm like, I don't know. Kirsten, something really concrete. My sister asked me to make a bunch of like grocery lists. So like, what are the groceries we get from like the different stores? And what's our favorite takeout and from where, and what's our order? Because she was like, when I go to the grocery store, if I'm going to Aldi and I already know what your Aldi staples are, I can just grab them for you.
That is smart.
And so that feels really concrete and helpful. It's so hard because, like, once you're in the darkness, it's hard for me to name it while I'm there.
Yeah, I know.
Just like regularly checking in, sending little things for Charlie. I'm really worried about Charlie. Not like super worried. I'm very aware of how split I think I'm going to feel. Already, I feel split because there's so many times where I'm like, the amount of times a day I like have to remind him not to like bonk into my stomach, or I'm like, ouch, because of the way that, and my body keeps moving. So the context for with which he engages with my body is constantly shifting. So it's like, he can never quite get it right because it's changing. And I don't know until that moment, or the amount of times I'm like, I cannot get up and like, I have to lay down. And that already feels really, really tricky for me. Like I'm having to choose between the two of them.
Which is new. That's a new experience for you.
It's a really new experience. And just considering how this feels for Charlie. I grew up with a sibling who was a little bigger age gap than what Charlie will have with this baby. But there was a deep hatred for me from her because she had been the baby. And it was just, it was handled. There was a lot of things that were out of, I mean, we were children. We were little babies. But I'm really, really sensitive to that because I felt I was the one on the receiving end. And I can only imagine what it felt like for my sister if she was treating me in that way when she was little.
You're being so intentional. I hear you thinking about and planning for Charlie in this experience with so much care and forethought. And that already feels really different than...
Ooh, mail for Charlie. Charlie's obsessed with getting mail.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking Otto and I need to start sending Charlie letters.
He loves getting mail. Yeah, I'm trying to help him do it back because he likes it so much when he receives it to send mail to other people, but I'm not always very good at it. But he is obsessed with getting mail.
This is fun to think about. This will be a good project for us.
Yeah, and it could give Charlie, it would be really nice to have Charlie to have a...
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that'd be so exciting.
Ooh, I love this. Okay, that feels like such a concrete, really special thing.
Sweet, sweet Charlie. Okay, I'm thinking for our people listening, maybe letting us jotting a note of like what was really helpful for you in postpartum land, and maybe or I loved the idea that Kirsten had about grocery lists. Like if anybody has ever been on the giving or receiving end of something like that, like what ideas you have or what is really supportive for a person in that boat in those early months. And we say early months, but like, you know, we just talked about that can span
year or two.
Yeah, year or two or three.
Or five.
Yeah.
I think too, one of the best gifts you can give someone you love who is going through this is to like learn about postpartum depression, learn, just like spend some time understanding what is happening. And postpartum depression can happen for non-birthing bodies, like the partner.
Oh yeah.
Can get, I know multiple people whose partners got really significant postpartum depression, and adoptive parents experience this. So not just, there are distinct things that happened to the body that births the human, and it is not confined to that, like this experience. So
yeah,
looking out for the people too who are like the partners or adoptive parents, or if you have a friend who has had an abortion, their body is still experiencing so much of...
Or a miscarriage.
Miscarriage, an abortion, a loss, weight. Like, they're still experiencing all of that postpartum.
Yeah.
Peace. And I don't think we talk about that enough at all.
Yeah. And I think... I like that you mentioned, like, partners and adoptive parents as well. Because I think that... And that's part of what is complicated about postpartum depression is that it seems like it's not just like this biological thing, but there's like this recipe around bringing in a new person into your family that is often like sleep deprivation and like identity shifts and isolation from the world that you knew before and the supports you had before. Like there's so many pieces working together that often create this perfect storm. So it's not just the person giving birth and distinct to that situation. Okay. Well, we will be invested in, man, it's coming soon. It's happening. Well, thanks for bringing us into it, and we'll talk to you all later.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
Bye.
This podcast is edited and perfected by the most beautiful wizard and my favorite dude, Micah Jones.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.